All right, it's 5 o'clock, 5 minutes, three seconds after five. So that's the time I've got. How about you? We've got a lot of pages to cover tonight, and this is some of the most practical aspect of this. Some of the others have been theoretical. But this gets really, really practical in talking about specific situations. And this is part, there are three lessons evidently on the leadership, and this is number one of three. And so the whole end of this series is going to talk about the skills that we need. And I believe we cover three of them tonight. I'm not sure of that. But let's first look and recognize as we think about leadership skills that the scripture there is from Psalm 78, by the way. He also chose David his servant and took him from the shepherds. From following the ewes that had young, he brought him to shepherd Jacob his people and Israel his inheritance. So he shepherded them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hand. That passage is loaded. Contrast King Saul. What kind of king was he? He was everything you'd want a king to be. And yet here's David who has no leadership skills except he'd spent all of his youthfulness in shepherding. And so when we begin talking about elders, that's what we're talking about. You're talking about leaders in the church and elders in the church. David does it more than I do, but I think we've done an injustice in just using the word elders to refer to our shepherds. You may have noticed this morning I said, and one of our shepherds, Paul, will lead the prayer for us. And I love the way that the shepherds are compassionate when they come forward, whenever people respond. That's what shepherds look like. They're concerned about the sheep, and they're there to be a part of it. And so it is the skills of this. There is the integrity of a person's heart. Integrity is what you see is exactly what I am. And in every relationship, man, that is, it's hard to be that way because, sometimes we want to make a better impression than what we are on others, and there's not a whole lot of integrity that's in there. Okay, let's begin talking about personal skills. And whenever we begin talking about personal skills, and this is the one of the three major points we'll look at tonight, that's on page 60, they develop their personal life, and it's not about pseudo, not ascetic, not putting godliness on parade. That's not spirituality. We're talking about his personal spiritual life. And you're talking about integrity. Sometimes you see individuals, I've known people in congregations running to be elders. They've got their heart, and they're determined they're going to be elders in the church. And they don't make good elders, usually, because that's not what it's all about. But spiritual leaders, as we talk about their spiritual life, they love their Bibles. Isn't that amazing? I hope that you appreciate our elders and their devotion to the Bible. And then you've got this entire list here, and I'm just going to read it because, there are no blanks to fill in. They get a Bible, they use their Bible, they preserve their Bible, they mark their Bible. Let's stop long enough to talk about how do you mark your Bibles. It's difficult. I've had trouble learning how to mark my Bible. Put notes in the side, and then if the note turns out to be a wrong note, the next time I come to that verse, I am so prejudiced by the note that I wrote that I can't even study the verse. And so I would encourage you to put, see this passage or look at that passage and everything. I remember asking Ron Coleman years ago about a question. He said, Dan, I'm glad you asked that. Said, I spent the last 4 or 5 months studying this. Let me get my notes. I put my notes in the Bible. And he opened his Bible and he said, I know what this is talking about because I wrote down D of J. But he said, I can't remember if that is the day of judgment or the destruction of Jerusalem. And so he said, I don't know what that means. But if you put those kinds of notes in there, it's going to prejudice you the next time. So you need to be careful about the kinds of notes that you put in there. They read their Bibles. They study their Bibles. They memorize their Bibles. They teach their Bibles. They live their Bibles. The spiritual leader is never far away from the Bible. And I don't know that we can overemphasize that. Wherewithal shall a young man, not an elder, wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way? Well, the very same way an elder cleanses his way, and that is, thy word have I hid in my heart that I might not sin against thee. Oh, let me not wander from thy commandments. And just the ability to memorize those verses and to know where they're found. Time out long enough for me to tell you how to memorize a verse. Don't memorize the verse and then memorize where it's found. If you want to memorize a verse, you state where it's found, you quote the verse, and then you state where it's found. It becomes one sentence then. It's a part of the memorization. And I've done it the other way so much that somewhere in 2 Corinthians there is that verse that says Jesus was the aroma. And that's because I was preaching on 2 Corinthians tonight, and that's the whole page I had deleted, whole page of slides I deleted. John, you were not here this morning, and I couldn't find a verse in my sermon. I almost lost my temper. If you saw me slam down on that pulpit, that's wood cussing. It's what I call that. You know, it's just absolute. It's not cussing. It's wood cussing. I have to work on that. Now then, let's get to that top of the next page, and that is they've got their Bible, and then they have a prayer closet. I don't know if that has to be one specific place. But when you are really, really troubled, don't you just love having a private place that you can go? And can be some room at the house. It may be sitting on the back porch. It may be going for a walk. But Jesus had a prayer closet because he often went, and in the Luke's account of Gethsemane said, he left the upper room and went to Gethsemane as it was his custom. We never knew that. Jesus went to Gethsemane as it was his custom. Judas knew it. Judas knew where to find him. But he had been there with the disciples before. That's a private place that you go. And what a great, great blessing it is to live in Palm Beach County. And to be able just to find a place on the beach where you just sit down, just you and God. I don't know if you do that or not. Sometimes it's mountain streams or places like that. But we need those. And there's a whole list of individuals in the Bible that had a place where they prayed. I think it is interesting. You look down number 4 under that. And Daniel's prayer closet. Where was that? You remember where he was? He was beside the window. Which window? Where did it face? Jerusalem. It's a window toward Jerusalem. And that's why that window was so important. But look at the importance of these names. Jehoshaphat, one of the four righteous kings. Habakkuk, Daniel, Ezra, and David had multiple ones. Just sit down and read the Psalms. And leaders know they cannot do it without God's help. And so they need wisdom that comes from prayer. If any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men liberally. Sometimes we just think, well, I'll pray and then I may get wisdom. Well, the Bible talks about where wisdom comes from. The entrance of thy word, Psalms 19, brings light. If I'm looking for divine wisdom, God give me wisdom, God help me have enough sense to get in the Bible and find out God's answer to this. Not me sit out and just, but then, you know, he walks in the counsel of the godly. And so there's godly counsel that can give us wisdom. And so when we ask God to give us wisdom in the multitude of counselors, there's wisdom. But don't just go to some psychologist who doesn't even know the meaning of sin and ask him, how do you deal with some spiritual problem in your life? Probably not going to find a lot of help. But when aged women, if we had them in the church, aged women would be the source for younger women to go to and say, what would you do about this very thing? And the same thing about aged men. And I don't know about you, but I've had so many mentors in this world. Some of them were parts of this congregation in years past and are even now parts of this congregation. People I look up to and respect. And so there is that wisdom. But you've got to slow down and take time to think about it. We make too many decisions just like that and think, and then we regret those kinds of decisions. And so you don't need to make a decision too soon. Under number 7 down there, leaders know they cannot do it without God's help. They need the wisdom that comes through prayer. They know it's difficult to stumble on, difficult to stumble when you're on your knees. And they know prayer changes things, but prayer changes people. And when you pray, it'll change you. If you've got trouble having in a relationship with some individual, let me tell you how to change that relationship with that individual. God, be as willing to forgive me as I am being willing to forgive, and then put that person's name there. You can't keep that prayer up. You'll stop praying or you'll change your life. I mean, you cannot just fervently pray, God, help me. You have your attitude toward me that I have toward. You know, blessed are the merciful. They're the ones who are going to obtain a mercy. Let's get back to some of the blanks that are there. Number C, spiritual leaders lead a meaningful devotional life. And there are three worship settings under that. There's public worship, there's family worship, and there's personal worship. And we understand that there is that joyful anticipation of the assembly. With regard to family worship, they lead their families in a meaningful exercise every day. Talk of these things when you're, Deuteronomy 6, when you're sitting in your house, when you're walking by the way, when you're rising up, when you're lying down. It's part of your day. It was a part of your daily life. I remember it was Sarah Bronson said, when I was growing up, we did not just go to church. It was our life. Church was our life was the concept she made. And that's it. Whenever the highlight of your week is a day like today when you get to be around some of the best people on this earth. As far as his family, the Bible says he leads his family. If he doesn't know how to lead his family, how shall he lead the church? You know, and he's got to lead his family. That word there is not a military term of leadership, and you need to recognize this. Every husband needs to recognize this. He stands before his family. That's interesting. It's not that he's out there, all right, everybody follow me. I know it all. You just do what I say. That's not leadership. That's military marching. You know, it's ducks in a row. But the verse is, he stands before his family. And a godly Christian woman will fall deeply in love with a godly Christian man. And that's what your home life is all about. And the same thing in relationships when you talk about just not the husband, but also the wife, and reverse those. Talk about that matter of spiritual worship and doing that, you need to take time to have a prayer life and to have a prayer closet and have a prayer place. Whenever you just feel like you're about to come loose, I think it is interesting when Jesus fed the multitude. He just had the most massive experience feeding the 5,000, then feeding the 4,000. You know what he said to the disciples? It's time for us to get away. He uses the word apart. And so I've changed the phrasing of that. We need to go apart before we fall apart. It's an interesting concept. But you can get so close to a situation and everything. If you don't have some private time for personal growth, that's interesting. You get to the next page. Spiritual leaders know God. They not only know about God, they know God. And there's a difference in the two. When a man knows about God, that's in his head. When a man knows God, that's in his heart. You know, Jesus, the Lord is my shepherd. Yeah, that's a memory verse. Or the Lord, when I say that, I think he's the shepherd of my heart. You may have heard the story. It's been around for so many years. There was a place where there were orators going to read the 23rd Psalm, and they had some great stage performer, and he stood up and read the 23rd Psalm. At the end, he got a standing ovation. And a man who was practically illiterate stood up. And whenever he read the 23rd Psalm, there was not applause, but there were not many dry eyes in the house. And somebody says, what's the difference? The man knows how to read. The second man knows the shepherd. And since that's the word used of elders, we need to understand that. There's a challenge down in that paragraph that says, challenge you to enter your closet, maybe literally shut the door, get on your knees, put your face to the floor, pour out your heart to God. It will do something to you. Don't you want to know? Be intimate with God. You've heard the name Marshall Keble a lot in years past. We don't hear it as much, but what an amazing man he was. Brother Willie Cato traveled with him in the latter part of his life. Brother Keble couldn't get around, you know, had to have somebody to make plane arrangements and do all. And Willie Cato, a brother, did that. And they were in a hotel room one night, and they both had their bath and everything. They were head for the bed. And Brother Keble said to Brother Cato, get down, get down. Brother Keble fell down on the floor, put his head on the bed, looked up at Willie, said, you get down. You want to know why there are many stories about that man? It's because of this very thing that we're talking about. And that is, he's a man who's intimate with God. And then, the next point, number E, is there is constantly undergoing a spiritual metamorphosis. Metamorphosis is the word used to describe a caterpillar becoming a butterfly. And if a man's an elder and he doesn't change from his shepherding style, from the way that he was, 25, 30 years ago, you know, I've been blessed to be around, at least three of our elders for nearly 40 years. And John, it's amazing how different you are from the way when I first met you. Don't say, Dan, it's amazing that you had so many more changes to make. You've done a pretty good job, I hope. But I mean that. I've just watched Johnny as an elder and watched him developing. And I am so glad, and I think I speak the heart of the other elders, I'm glad Johnny's in that room when things are discussed. I remember my uncle, who was an elder in the church for 50 years, retired from being an elder, and the eldership said to him, okay, go ahead and resign, but you still got to come to elders' meetings because we need your counsel. And they'd say his name was Willie. It was my uncle, Uncle Willie. And they said, let me tell you about your Uncle Willie. We'd be in there and he'd say, brethren, you're rushing this. Let's spend a week praying about it. Then let's decide about it. How's that for personal wisdom and this metamorphosis that goes on? And then there's this spiritual leaders. They're not in the sunlight, not in the spotlight, though it would appear they're that way. They live in the shadows. And he mentions here on this page three shadows. They serve in the shadow of the cross. Look at that shadow of the cross, you know, laying down, over an elder. And there's the shadow of the Father, and there's the shadow of the judgment. Hebrews 13:17 says, they are those who must give an account. So they live in the shadows of the cross, of the Father, and of the judgment. Was it Daniel Webster said, the most sobering thought I've ever had is that someday I must stand before God and give an account for the way that I've lived. That's the shadow of the judgment. And I think that the thing that helped me when I was a teen, would you want to be doing this if Jesus came back? I use that very same thing in relationship to my children about how would you feel? Can I go do this? Can I go over here? Can we try this? Can we do that? Is that what you'd want to be doing when Jesus came back? I remember once, first time Judah and I ever went to New Orleans, we finally decided we didn't want to be in New Orleans if Jesus came back. We were on Bourbon Street, and we finally just decided, this is not the place for us, and I'm sure it's much, much worse than it was, 40-plus years ago when we went to New Orleans, but there is that. Let's change the page, and spiritual leaders have lost their affections and their attachment to this world. Set your affection on things that are above. That's what Colossians 4, chapter 3, verse 1. And it says where Christ sits at the right hand of God. So we lose their attachment to this world. We're from another world. We are aliens. We're pilgrims. And one of the things about living in New Zealand, I was an alien there. Wasn't going to live there that very long, you know. So I made decisions on the basis of the fact I'm not going to live here very long. And I finally transferred that attitude toward living in the physical world in which we live. I'm not going to be here. Because this world can encompass us. It's not riches that are a curse. It's those who desire to be rich fall into temptations and a snare. After all, the reason we're not attached to this world, look what is their world. And read this list of things, A through I. Here's where our affection is. On the Father, on the Savior, on the treasures, on the citizenship, on angels, on hope, on reward, on our names being written in heaven, and on the inheritance that is ours. You want to be spiritual? Then think about what we've just talked about. Get a Bible, get on your knees, and then get yourself out of the way so God can do a metamorphosis on you and make you to be a different kind of person. Point number two, number one was that personal skills. Point number two is, and that's on page 63, that is people skills. What's that mean? Well, I think we understand what it means, personal skills and people skills, but personal is what I am. It's how I change. It's how being a leader in the church, how all of that changes me. And so there are preacher skills. Or pardon me, there are people skills. I've said preachers, but there are people skills. And you know, he's a fine leader in the italics under that, but he has no people skills. And therefore, he's not really that good of a leader. True elders, true leaders are genuinely people persons, and they are out among the sheep, John chapter 10. It's easier for some to do this than it is for others. Sharing something personal about Jonathan. Jonathan says, you know, you ever watch Big Bang? He says, you know, who's that guy? Who's the nerd that's there?
Sheldon.
You remember him? He has no people skills. Jonathan says, Dad, that's me. He says, I put my foot in my mouth and I offend people, and Julie is always there right beside me to mellow it out, and she's so good. But he says, I just don't know how to get along with folks. I mean, he just speaks his mind and everything, and sometimes there are individuals who are like that, and I just love Jonathan saying, you know, I'm Sheldon, but except I've got Julie. And I've thought about things he's done in his life and in times past, and certain personality, you get around that. They're usually quiet people, they're private people, and they're not outgoing, they're very introverted and everything. And so they've really got to work on the matter of people skills. And to Jonathan's credit, he has really, really worked at it over the years and everything. And I've really been fun watching him as he has mellowed. And that's that aspect of it. What does this mean, people skills? Number A under that, that's on page 63 of those of you who just came in. People skills, leaders must be approachable. Elders must be approachable. They must be a get at-able. You get to get to them. They must be warm. They must be accessible. They cannot be arrogant and aloof. And they cannot appear to be arrogant and aloof. And so you may know more about the situation than that other person does, but you don't have to show that you know more. They're there for compassion. They're there to have somebody that will be a part. They're not isolationists. Members have needs and problems and questions and constructive criticisms and suggestions, and they ought to feel free to approach an elder. I think it is interesting over the years who has been people, as they've talked about, well, I really get along with so-and-so as an elder. And somebody would talk about that same elder here at Palm Beach Lakes and said, you know, I never can get close to him. I never can get around him and everything. You know what that has to do? Two personalities is what it is and everything. And so they blended with some. But you got to be multi-skilled. You've got, and the easiest way that I know to do that, and I don't know that this is here, is you just got to learn to put yourself in the other person's place. When you say what you say, don't expect them to understand it what you say, the way you understand it, because they're not you. And you've got to be understandable and put yourself in their place. Dan, can I talk about you and Lonnie in the shower? Is that the, you remember that? It is the classic story. I use this in marriage counseling and everything. Now, David had been out working in the yard, and I may state this wrong, Dan, and afterwards you can get this. Next time I tell it, I probably will tell it my way, but I will remember this, not the way Dan remembers it. But Dan had been out, and he came in to get in the shower. But as he came in, Lonnie says they're having a shower down at the building. And so Dan asked the question, whose shower is it? You know what Lonnie thought Dan was saying? It's my shower. I'm getting in the shower before you. And she had every right. Dan's come in, he's sweaty and he's dirty, and he says, I'm going to get in the shower. Oh, by the way, who's that shower for down the building? She told it. And Dan says, but when he said, whose shower is it? She was upset because she thought it was talking about Dan's. You know, Dan had taken his shower and everything. You've got to understand, you say things, and you've done it in your life, and you got to learn to laugh at yourself and to say, I'm sorry. Not, I'm sorry you took it wrong. I'm sorry that I said it that way. Now, you can be thinking, I also am sorry you're so stupid you're not able to understand what I meant when I said what I said. But you can't evidence that at all. Just go ahead and take the blame. Forgive me for not understanding where you were in relationship to this. And think about how approachable Jesus was. Let's go to that next page, and that's page 64, and we've got to go to 76. We're not going to make it. Leaders must be good listeners. And a way to be a good listener is down number 4 under that, under good listeners. 2, they have perfected the art of asking questions. Even if you already know the answers, ask questions about it to get them involved in a conversational mode. Get them to be giving you feedback in relationship to this, because it's likely you do not fully understand it and will give you unbelievable insight in where they're coming from in relationship to this. And I love the James 1:19, let every man be swift to hear. Instead of not being angry, you know, swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. That's amazing. You listen, 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 and before you get all flustered and everything, you've got to learn to be good listeners. If you develop a skill, but in relationship to being good listeners, remember that verse in Proverbs that says, if a man speaks before he's heard the whole matter, he's a fool. And I think I mentioned it in here as a young preacher. In marriage counseling, I talked to the wife, and what a scoundrel that she was married to. I've heard one side of the whole picture. And I talked to him after I was ready to dress him down, and maybe was arrogant when I was talking to him, and there's another side to that. So in every situation, there are reasons people make the decision, and part of being approachable is the ability to understand. Elders must be kind. If they're not, they're the wrong kind. They're not brash. They're not abrasive. They're not harsh. They're not hard. They're mild, tender, considerate, and gracious, because that's what Christ was like. And that's what we as His servants need to be like. They must be commiserating. What does that mean? They weep when members weep. Compassion. Compassion. Passion's a feeling. Passion's an emotion. And compassion is you and I share this passion. So whenever you're talking about a person being compassionate, you're talking about an individual who is able to put himself in the other person's place and to see where they are and to feel what they fear. And that makes you that individual who has who has people skills. Turn the page. Leaders must learn not to be respecters of persons. That's the biblical expression. What does that mean? in your life, you have close friends, those that you're closer, but you never treat your close friend much different than the way you treat those who are distant. I'm talking about love your enemies like you love your friends. I'm talking about agape. You do for your enemies what you do for your friends. And we don't do this. We're not really, really good at doing this. But to be respectful of others, you've got to be. And look at all the adjectives that are here. Courteous, polite, fair, gentle, civil. The people know they'll never be an object of ridicule, sarcasm, derisions when they are with them. One of the things that I had in my younger life was a terrible inferiority complex and had to deal with it and everything. But nothing hurt me more than when I would start blushing about something and then somebody say, look at him, he's blushing. You know what that does? Am I starting to blush right now? I feel like I'm starting, the sweat's starting to come out again because it's a programmed response that I have. It's probably nothing than to be in a situation somebody starts laughing at you for what you've said or something like that. That's not what elders do. They put themselves in your place, and so they never use sarcasm. They never use derision with others if they really want to impact them. And what about the golden rule? Luke chapter 6, verse 31. I love the way my mother taught me. What would you do, or what would you want them to do to you if they were you and you were them? What would you want them to do? That's what you ought to do. How's that for saying? Put yourself in the other place. How would I want to be treated in this place? And that's the way I need to treat people. So in situations like that. And number G under this, they must have faith in people. And under that, the opposite of having faith in people is distrust and suspicion. And they do not produce followers. What does that mean? Well, agape love says you think no evil, and that's emphasized a little bit later in this study, but you and I need to understand. I love Philemon verse 21. There's a verse under that. Paul writes to Philemon, and he says, now I know that whenever he comes back, you're going to treat him right. But if you don't want to, then whatever he's stolen from you, I'll pay for it. What a compassionate attitude by Paul. What an encouragement that is to Philemon. I'm a runaway slave, and the great Apostle Paul has confidence in me. That's really, really important. And we got to hurry. Leaders must be observant. That's number H. And this is one that I struggle with more and more as I get older. They know people's names, and they know their those people's children's name, and they may even know their pets' names. I'm lucky if I can remember. You know, you remember their last name? Can't remember their first name? Are you to that point in your life that it's Lance and Brenda and oh yeah, it's Brenda. Brenda, Lance, I got your last name, Lance. Your name's Collier because you go with Brenda. You understand? That's the path I go down in relationship to this.
But I remember when we first started here 40 years ago, I was so impressed that you immediately knew our name.
Yes. So, well, I remember you came from Margate.
Yep.
Isn't that amazing? You told me that 40 years or 38 years ago or something like that, and I remembered you moved here from Margate. I have no idea why I stored that wasted piece of information in my head, and if I could just get rid of some of that junk that's in there, I'd probably remember your name. But what I do is to associate people. I associate them with their job. I associate with where we spent time together and that type of thing, and that enables me to call back their names. And sometimes we do a pretty good job. We had a fellow, a guy that today said, I'm Ken Tyler. I haven't seen Ken Tyler in 40 years. And he was in down Fort Lauderdale, and he said, I want to go up and hear Dan preach. Ken has preached for 46 years in Arab, Alabama. I haven't been to Arab, Alabama in 40 years anyway. When he said Ken Tyler, I said, I bet you're from Arab. Couldn't remember his wife's name. I got it now. It's Hannah, and it's Hannah because it's spelled the same way backwards it is frontward. And so I feel that in there, and so her name is Ava the next time I see her. You know, I've got a box over there that has words that are that way, but I might be able to come up with that. They must be observant. This is a skill you develop. Women are so much better than this, than men are. Judy would say in relationship to the kids, something is bothering Debbie. Something's bothering Jonathan. And I'd say, what? And sometimes, just as in a personal way, a personal experience, we're in the car on the way home, and Judy says, I think they're having marriage problems. And I said, who? And she'll mention somebody, and I'll say, did you see anything? Did you hear anything? Judy, why on earth? Don't you know agape love thinks no evil? And I preached my sermon about that. And 2 months later, this couple is coming and saying, could you help us with our marriage? I don't understand, women, how you just sense it. But your wife reads you like a book. And Judy is the only person on this earth that knows when my smile is artificial. I really have a happy face. I mean, I really keep one. And Judy can look at me and say, what's bothering you? I don't know what it is. You know, it just, leaders need to be observant. And I'm not just talking about trying to figure out what makes a person tick and everything. You got to see what's going on. I remember on 36th Street, sitting on the stage one time, and there was a man and a woman in the church. And he looked at this woman, not his wife, he looked at this woman 26 times while I was sitting on the stage. If I recall the name, you might recognize that name, so I'm a long way from ever doing that. But isn't that amazing? Sometime later, I did marriage counseling with that couple. That's observant. You know, I mean, and I'm not good at it and everything. But you've got to read the ability to see when somebody's depressed. What's bothering you? What's bothering you? And those are great, great questions if you're good at being observant. And so take notice of the little children, the elderly, and the infirm. And they see things that they can sincerely compliment. And Jesus was observant. And so get to know your members. Number I on that page, leaders must have the proper concept of the congregation. The congregation, they're not clients, they're not patrons, they're not hired hands, they're not members of an army of which you are the commander-in-chief, but they are brothers and sisters in Christ, so treat them that way. And you turn the page, and leaders must have genuine interest in the people whom they serve and interest in them one by one. That's good. Genuine interest in people. And that takes time and it takes energy. And it takes remembering. And it takes going back to them, 3 weeks later, a month later, 6 weeks later and saying, hey, how'd that work out? Can I help you in any way? And that is, there's got to be a genuine interest in people in whom they serve and an interest in them. And it's got to be one-on-one. They appreciate the value of the individual. And go down to number K on that. Leaders must be honest must have an honest and a transparent love for people. It's got to be obvious. It's got to be obvious that they that you love them and there is that aspect of it. Let's go to the last part, and that is relationships. Elders have relationships, and that first relationship, and this is on page 67, is a relationship with fellow elders. How do elders get along? Under that, their fellow elders is in the blank. Well, relational skills is the first empty blank that's up there, and under that is a relationship with fellow elders. You've got that aspect of there. And so these next several pages talk about elder-to-elder relationships. And it's a relationship with fellow elders. There must be an understanding and appreciation for equality among the elders. Every elder brings some unique skills to an eldership. And I've seen that and observed it all of these years. Johnny, you and I could begin talking about somebody like Don Hickerson. You and I would think pretty part of the much same thing about Don Hickerson. Personal work. I mean, you remember when Don was here, he was always trying to get us to be evangelistic and everything. That's the way I remember him. And you can go back to any of these elders that's been elders here, and they bring strength to it. And whenever there's no longer a Joe Holland in the church or no longer a Jerry Hopkins in the church, the eldership changes. And so there must be equality, and there must be a realization that all elders do not have the same skill. Your background, your educational, your work, where you work and all the rest has developed some work styles, some work skills that really work in your job, and so you're good at it, but not everybody has those same skills. And so there's got to be an equality. And because of that, look down number two under that on page 67, there must be a mutuality of respect for each other. Elders have got to learn to really, really respect. Phil, you may not remember this incident, but when you drive the elders up to Montgomery, when you go up to see the folks at APA, you still drive? You know what I remember about you when you had the van and you were driving up there? Well, the elder says, "He's the best I've ever seen looking in his rearview mirror." Isn't that funny? I remember that. That's a skill that you've got, evidently, you know. And you haven't had three wrecks doing that? I mean, no, I made that up. But you understand, everybody brings strengths. And you've got to recognize the strength of that other person. They may be far better in organizational skills than you are. But there is equality in relationship to that. And you've got to understand that. And there must be that respect. And under that, he says, elders must respect others' feelings, limit their others' limitations, their egocentricism, their conviction, their shortcomings, their burdens, and their personalities. And all that is works in marriage. It works in every relationship. And that is just to have an appreciation for what that person is. Let's turn the page. Elders must also not take each other too seriously. And let's fill in the blanks, because I look down at the clock and it's time to stop. Can you believe that? Look on that page. Elders must realize they are subject to the eldership. And elders must be willing to bend and submit to one another in matters of judgment. That's down under number V there. In matters, be able to win and submit to each other. And what about these things on the next page? And I'm sorry that I've messed up the time. Had no realization that it was the time it was. On page 69, the key words on page 69. Are you on page 69, or are we going too fast for you? You still on 68? 69, fill in the blanks on 69. Confidentiality. No one segment of the work is to be exclusively under one elder's control. That's the blank there. The first word is confidentiality. The second one is under one elder's control. They must pray for one another, and they must pledge cooperation with the eldership. I love Jerry Hopkins' statement to the deacons, and that is, deacons, we recognize that you are so good at being subject to us, but we want you to remember that all of us elders individually are just as subject to the eldership as you are. There's no such thing as a head elder. And so they respect the load of elders, and I'm on the next page. Look on the next page, and let's fill in number B on page 70, relationship with deacons. We don't have time to look at all of this, and so you can go in here and see if you can guess what these are. Number B, down the middle of the page on page 70, relationship with deacons. And there's all sorts of information about the relationships elders need to have with deacons, and my oh my, we need to spend some time discussing that. There's a relationship on the next page, number C, the relationship with the preachers. And I think that's the last of these section, and that is the relationship to preachers. And there's all kinds of information that's there, even though there are some blanks that are there in the notes and everything. We need to understand this. I'm sorry for not getting through all of this, but I knew when I started, and there were 16 pages for us discovered in 45 minutes. We're not going to be able to do it, and I should not have told so many personal stories. Isn't that amazing? So relationship elders to elders, elders to deacons, elders to preachers. That's the outline of this. And then underneath that, there are all kinds of comments and paragraphs, and you may not know the blanks, but you'll be able to read the comments. Those comments are really outstanding. That's it, and thank you very much for coming. And David, by the way, in case you're wondering where he is, he did a workshop of some sort with where Neil Pollard preaches up in Evansville, Indiana. He will be speaking at the Bear Valley Lectureship on the latter part of this next week. And then he'll be back in town next Saturday after he's on the Bear Valley Lectureship. It's great to have a preacher that other people want to hear preach. Okay, that's it for tonight.